Is a change of zone number 1623, W. and J. Jones Family Limited Partnership.
Gentlemen, before I read into the record the two ordinance proposals for these rezonings, I'd like to ask Mr. Fuquay, the attorney on behalf of the applicant, to come forward.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are still having a meeting here. If you wish to talk, please do so in the lobby.
The reason I asked Mr. Fuquay to come forward before I read these into the record is in discussion, it's been pointed out that the booklet that's prepared for this application, these two applications are in one document. And I believe it's a request of the Mr. Fuquay on behalf of the applicant that we combine the public hearing on these two applications.
All right, then.
Just need to make that part of the record.
Okay.
Is that true, Jim?
Yeah, they're interconnected, and I'll present everything as one application. We'll just incorporate that in the second one. It'll speed things up, and really, I'd just be repeating myself.
Okay. Mr. Lank, do you want me to read both of them into the record now, and then or do you want to do them one at a time?
No, I'll read them. But I'll do it all in.
You do it all at once?
Yeah.
Keep in mind, again, though, gentlemen, that you have to ask.
We'll have to vote separately, but we can hear them both together. So we're going to hear change of zone number 1623 and change of zone number 1624, W&J Jones Family LLP, or LP, sorry.
Change of zone 1623 is the application of W&J Jones Family LP to amend the comprehensive zoning map from an AR1 agriculture residential district to a CR1 commercial residential district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, for land lying northeast of King's Highway, also referred to as Road 268, and across from Dartmouth Drive, to be located on 1.96 acres, more or less. Change of zone 1624, the application of W&J Jones Family LP to amend a comprehensive zoning map from an AR1 agriculture residential district to a MRRPC, medium density residential district, residential planned community, for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, for land lying 181.48 feet northeast of King's Highway, also known as Road 268, and across from Dartmouth Drive, to be located on 44.49 acres, more or less. For the record, to the interested parties, we received a booklet about yay big. I don't even know how many pages it is, but it's rather large, on behalf of both these applications combined. And the commissioners all have copies, and they are a part of the record. We received comments on each application from the Sussex County Engineering Department. It's in the form of a memorandum dated December 11th. Advising us, referencing the application, the location of the parcel, that the intent is general office building on 1.96 acres, the system design assumption for the SOAR district is 4 units per acre. The project is located in a county-operated and maintained sanitary SOAR district, which is the West Rehoboth expansion area. The planning study assumptions for the parcel is 4 EDUs per acre for the AR zone land for a total of 7.84 EDU. At the design assumption, capacity can be assumed for an office that not exceeds 7,840 square feet. If more capacity is required, additional information should be provided and a capacity review completed before approval. Ordinance number 38, construction will be required. The current system connection charge rate is $4,132 per EDU. Parcel is served presently with a 6-inch lateral, which is not adequate for the proposed use and the remainder of the parcel. Installation of an 8-inch lateral at the developer's expense is required for the new parcel. Providing service to the remainder of the parcel is also required. Conformity to the North Coastal Planning Study or undertaking an amendment will be required. And in additional comments, if more than 7.84 EDUs are required, downstream sewer line and pump station upgrades may be required. The engineering department will not approve issuance of a building permit for the project until those upgrades have been completed and that a concept plan is required. For the parcel for the multifamily use of 144 units with one community center adjacent to the rezoning for the commercial use, we have the following comments. The same system design assumption of four EDUs is the maximum. The sewer district is the same. Wastewater capacity is available for the project as long as the 20.3 acre area of open space is included in the project. Ordinance number 38 construction would be required. The system design or system connection charge rate is still $4,132 per EDU. A connection point is available on Kings Highway. In other comments, the proposed project is in the West Rehoboth expansion area and connection to the sewer system is mandatory. The proposed project is within planning study assumptions for sewer service and the sewer capacity is adequate as long as the 20.3 acres of open space is included in the project. The proposed development will require a developer-installed collection system in accordance with county standard requirements and procedures. County engineer must approve the connection points. The engineering department requires that a sewer concept plan be submitted for review and approval. And the developer will be required to provide gravity service to a proposed commercial use on part of the property. County recently adopted new road standards. The standards become effective on January 1st, 2009 and will apply to this project, and that a concept plan is required. From the Sussex Conservation District, I received two memos referencing soil types. They both were similar in comment. That was received on December 8th. The soils on site are downer sandy loam, one with 2 to 5% slopes and one with 5 to 10% slopes. There's Fort Montlumy sand and also Herlock sandy loam. The applicant would be required to follow recommended erosion and sediment control practices and to maintain vegetation. There are no storm flood hazard areas affected. There are no reference to off-site drainage improvements. There are no tax ditches affected. On-site drainage improvements may be necessary, and the state please check to ensure that all state and federal wetland laws are followed prior to any mechanical land clearing. And a large portion of the site contains hydric soils. Attached to that memorandum is a copy of an aerial infrared showing the site and surrounding area. There's also a copy of a soil survey map, a map legend, a map unit legend, and a document referencing prime and other important farmlands. And there's also a selected soil interpretation and report attached to that memo. From the Department of Transportation, we received several comments. And finally, on May 5th of 2008, we received a Department of Transportation letter of no objection to this application based on the entrance location only. Makes reference that Parcel A is to be developed as 144 townhomes. Parcel B is to be developed as a 12,000 square foot general office building. Parcel A and B shall each have access from Kings Highway via perpetual cross access easements. The perpetual cross access easements have been established to the lands now or formerly of the Outen Real Estate Holdings LLC. At that such time that parcel develops, the entrance shall be relocated directly across from the Carpenter's Crossing entrance, and access shall be from the internal street, and direct access to Kings Highway will not be permitted. Entrance plans shall be developed in accordance with department rules and regulations, and then it makes reference to the letter of no objection. That was signed by Mark Cotte, subdivision engineer. Lastly, we have, and it's in the document, is a copy of the Office of Management and Budget Planning and Administration, what we refer to as the Office of Planning Coordination comments. They are part of the booklet. And lastly, we received one letter, and it states that the Board of Directors of Fairway Village Condominiums in Lewis, Delaware, in conjunction with the membership, have asked us to forward a letter to you stating their extreme opposition to the proposed community of Hunter Walk. The proposed community is owned by W&J Jones Family LP and is located and makes reference to the tax map location, the size of the parcel, the physical location on Kings Highway. The Jones Family LLP is proposing, and it's this is written some time ago. Correction. Sorry about that. I got two letters from the same people. That was the old one. This request for a new, let me see. Again, as property manager for Fairway Village, I've been asked by Fairway Village Board of Directors to submit a letter to your attention regarding the proposed construction of a new community known as Hunter's Walk. They ask that this letter be presented at both the commission and council hearings. The request for the new community office complex has been submitted by W&J Jones Family LP, where the plans call for an access road coming off Kings Highway. While the owners of Fairway Village do not directly oppose the new community, they do strenuously oppose any access through the community known as Fairway Village. Today, the main access road to the community of Fairway Village is shared with the Jones Par 3 golf course. To enter either the community or the existing golf course, owners, visitors must turn east off of the northbound lanes of Route 1. This entrance is extremely hazardous due to the close proximity to the turn to enter Kings Highway. Many motorists assume travelers are going to continue the right turn and head on to the Cape May Lewis Ferry or simply head into Lewis, as opposed to entering the golf course or the community which just precedes the intersection. This has led to several rear-end collisions and numerous near misses. The recent approval of Lazy Susan's has already added significantly to the congestion and traffic entering the community, as the parking lot of the Crab House is woefully overburdened. The owners of the community are concerned about not only adding to this extremely hazardous condition, but also increasing any traffic flow within the community where many children play. Owners are seeking assurances that any alternative ingress egress to Hunter's Walk does not include use of Callaway Drive, the main roadway serving the community of Fairway Village. They are keenly aware of DLDOT and other regulatory bodies generally seeking to pass in and out of a new community and support this initiative. However, they do not want to have the burden of an additional hazardous condition be placed upon them. As a matter of future concern, if the Par 3 was to eventually close down, the residents would prefer that any access back to this existing facility be permanently cordoned off. And they respectfully ask the commission as well as council to honor their request to prohibit any ingress egress through the community of Fairway Village. And that was signed by Barry Nichols, property manager. And that's all I have at this time.
All right, sir, we thank you. But before we get started, are there folks here with an interest in this application this evening? Okay, I just want to let you know that by all means, feel free to get up, take a look, a closer look at any of the exhibits that happen to be shown. If at any time you can't see what's going on or something, by all means, get up, take a look, or wave at me or do something, anyone with an interest in it. With that being said, the chair recognizes Mr. Fuquay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wheatley, gentlemen, for the record, my name is James Fuquay. I'm an attorney here in Georgetown, and I am representing the applicant, W&J Jones Family Limited Partnership. And with me tonight is the W&J Jones family, and they're seated right back here. And that's basically Walt Jones, who was the W of W&J Jones family, and his children, Paul, Rick, and Barbara. Also with me is Gary Couples of ECI whose firm is doing the engineering and site design, and Guy DiMarino, who's with Traffic Planning and Design, Inc., who are the traffic engineers on the development. For the benefit of the public, there are double boards. I'll be referring to this board over here, which are the same boards that are on the other side. As was stated, there has been a revised site plan and a booklet which have been submitted, which we'll be referring to in our presentation, copies of which I think you have in front of you. As was stated, we are before you tonight with two rezoning applications. One is for a CR1 commercial rezoning for a 2.3-acre parcel. The second is for an MRRPC rezoning for 144-unit residential development to be known as Hunter's Walk. The RPC basically will be located on the remainder of the lands that are owned by the Jones family. As was stated, these applications are interconnected, so to avoid repetition, I'm going to address both the applications in my presentation and basically incorporate that as our presentation for the second application. The land comprising these applications is made up of three separate tax map parcels, which are and have been for some time utilized as the Midway Par 3 golf course and driving range. The land is just located off of the northeast side of Route 1 and the east side of Kings Highway. Of all the land applications that I have ever presented to the county, this land is without any doubt the land that I am most familiar with personally, having hit probably thousands of golf balls at this driving range over the years, and that goes back probably about 20 years. I'm particularly familiar with the area on the far left and the far right side of the driving range.
That would be the hook and slice areas, yeah.
The three tax map parcels involved, tax map parcel 66.02 contains 29.29 acres, and it is the driving range parcel. 2.3 acres of that parcel has been subdivided, and that is a recorded subdivision, and that 2.3 acres of that parcel is the piece that is being proposed for the CR1 rezoning. The second tax map parcel is parcel 69. It contains 17.8 acres. It is the location of the Par 3 golf course and also has an office building on that, which is used for the management of the golf course and for storage. And tax map parcel 68 was actually a strip of land. It contains about 2.5 acres. It was purchased at a sheriff's sale in 2000, and basically that was a strip of land between two parcels that had unknown owners, and eventually went to sheriff's sale, I believe, from the county for tax non-payment, and that was by purchase by Mr. Jones. Historically, that was kind of used as part of the golf course because it was never claimed. The driving range parcel was leased for years by Mr. Jones, and he actually purchased it in 1999, and Walt Jones and his wife Jane actually purchased the golf course parcel back in 1981 when he started the Midway Par 3 golf course. Again, the two applications, the CR zoning is for the 2.3 acres, which fronts on the east side of Kings Highway. The MRRPC is for the remainder of the land. The CR1 rezoning, basically what's being proposed for that, and I know you have the plans in front of you, but if you can, just for reference, this is the piece up here. What's being proposed on the commercial zoning would be an office building, 12,000 square feet of office space. Based on comments that were received during the PLUS process, the original design of the commercial piece was modified as far as parking. All of the parking was relocated to the sides and the rear of the building. There is a total of 49 parking spaces, including 5 handicap spaces. There's no parking located in the front of the building. The area in the front of the building will be improved with a 10-foot-wide multi-use path, which will run along Kings Highway. And then between the multi-use path and the actual driveway and building on the site would be a 15-foot-wide landscape area that, again, I think would present an attractive front to the building along Kings Highway. There'll be one entrance from Kings Highway, and that will be an entrance that will serve as an entrance to both this commercial parcel as well as to the Hunter's Walk RPC. We believe that the CR1 rezoning is appropriate for the 2.3-acre parcel, and it's consistent with the nature of the area and actually constitutes somewhat of an infill of commercial use. And I say that because the parcel to the one side of this piece is already zoned commercial, and the parcel on the other side is also zoned commercial. And as you're familiar with the 600-foot strip that runs up Route 1, basically this is all commercial over here. So the land directly across Kings Highway from the site is also zoned commercial. The land on the other side of Kings Highway is developed as an office complex, a business complex. There's a general mixture of commercial uses along Kings Highway on both sides. There's banks and medical offices. There's a funeral home. There's a bakery and several other businesses. The second application, as I said, for the remainder of the parcel is for 144 residential unit MRRPC on 44.33 acres of land. And again, I want to stress that's the remainder of the driving range parcel and all of the golf course parcel and all of the strip parcel that I mentioned. The original plan that was filed with the county, which was also the original plan that went to PLUS, and this was filed back in May of 2007, proposed 178 residential units in 11 multifamily buildings, and those buildings were located on both the driving range parcel and along the western side of the golf course parcel. And Gary, if you can put that other plan up. There's no color on here, but again, here's the commercial parcel, and the original plan had some of the buildings located here and then the remainder of the buildings located along the side of the golf course parcel. And that was the plan in the file. And I also, what the original plan proposed, you heard, this is the Callaway Drive, which is the entrance to the golf parcel from Route 1. And then this would be the new entrance over here. And the original plan had this interconnected. So basically, you could go from one to the other and vice versa.
Just so we're clear, though, the plan that we're looking at and that is the subject this evening is this plan here.
That's correct.
Okay. Was this plan in the file?
Yes.
And just as a procedural issue, when that happens, are these plan somehow identified so that when someone from the public comes to look at the file, they know what they're looking at?
We usually rate void and then see plans received whatever date they
just want to make sure, because I don't want there to be any confusion in anybody's mind as to what we're looking at here. So
right, so I refer to that as the original plan.
Okay.
And as I said, that was the plan that was presented to PLUS. In going through the PLUS process, based on comments that were received during that process and on further consideration of the design by Mr. Couples and the Jones family, it was determined that the site plan could be redesigned to create what we think now is a superior utilization of both the site and the resources of the site. So that original plan has been replaced. A modified plan had been substituted. The revised plan, which is the colored plan on the board, is the plan that's before you tonight. And basically, what the modified plan does is clusters the residential development on the driving range parcel. In order to accomplish that, the number of units were reduced from the original 178 to 144 units. The 144 units would be located in nine multifamily buildings, and that would be a gross density for the RPC of 3.2 units per acre. By clustering the residential development on the driving range parcel, the existing par 3 golf course will be preserved and will serve as an open vista of space and a recreational amenity for both the residents of the new proposed community as well as the general public. The commercial piece, as well as the RPC, will only use the entrance from Kings Highway. The golf course itself will continue to use its existing entrance from Route 1, but the residential development and the golf course parcel will not be interconnected to the golf course parcel. So there will be no Route 1 access to or from the new commercial piece or the new residential development. If the county or if the fire marshal so requests, we can create an emergency connection for emergency vehicles that would not be open but could be used in the event of a necessity.
It usually doesn't come in the form of a request, but I understand what you mean.
It's no problem.
They may tell you to do it, yeah.
Mr. Lank mentioned the letter that was from the Fairway Village property management. And I did contact Mr. Nichols and advised him that a revised plan had been submitted that that deleted any excess access from Route 1, which, again, was the nature of their concern. And again, as their letter stated, the owners of Fairway did not directly oppose the new community. They opposed was the access to that community through their development. As far as the RPC, obviously, by its location, it will have easy access to recreational amenities as part of the golf course. You can walk over and play the golf course, walk over and putt on the putting green. In addition, the development will have recreational amenities, which would include a tennis court, a multi-use court, which would be a combination tennis court and basketball court, a swimming pool, and a community center. And those areas are located The development would have sidewalks located on both sides of the interior streets, along with street lighting along the streets. The streets are proposed to be private. They would be built to county engineering design requirements. Stormwater would be directed to a central stormwater pond that's located in the rear of the driving range parcel. And you can see that pretty obviously on the plan. Stormwater design and improvements would meet or exceed the requirements of the Soil Conservation District, and best management practices would be utilized in the stormwater facilities. There is a proposed bus stop shown near the development entrance, and that, of course, would be subject to school district approval for that. And that is shown right down here. I'm sorry, right over here by the entrance. To the rear of the driving range parcel, there are located approximately 7.4 acres of federal jurisdictional wetlands. And you can pretty clearly see those as the darker area on that site plan that's on the board. There'll be no encroachment or disturbance of any of the wetland areas. In addition, the way Mr. Couples was able to design the site plan, there will be established, which is shown on the site plan, a minimum 50-foot buffer adjacent to the wetlands or the wetland boundary, and again, that will remain undisturbed. That 50-foot minimum buffer is a minimum buffer, and in most places, the buffer is significantly larger than the 50 feet, in many places more in the neighborhood of 100 to 120 feet. The site design, as shown on the new plan, will also preserve over 84% of the existing woodlands that are located on the site. The total RPC site contains 44.3 acres. The total open space, and I know we're in the process of defining exactly what open space is, so I'll make it clear that the open space I'm referring to here as the total open space is the wetland areas, the buffers, the woodlands, the grass areas around the buildings, the recreation complex, and the par 3 golf course. Totals 37.5 acres, which is over 84% of the site, which will remain as either open space or as a recreational amenity. I do want to repeat, because I know because of the original plan and the change, that the golf course will remain as open space. It will continue to operate as a golf course by the Jones family, at least that's their intention. If the golf course ever ceases to operate, that land will remain as open space. The density that's allocated to that parcel is being utilized as part of this RPC. So that open space will be permanent open space, never be developed because basically it's being used in these density calculations for the RPC and will remain as either a golf course or, you know, whatever the future holds in terms of a park or general open space. In preparing the design of the site plan, early on a number of studies were done, and they were utilized, again, in preparing the plan. They are contained in the exhibit book, and they make up a good bulk of that exhibit book. But for the record, there was, number one, there was a traffic impact study that was prepared by Traffic Planning and Design, Inc. There was a wetland delineation report prepared by Ed Lene of Environmental Resources, Inc. That report has been submitted to the Army Corps of Engineers. A cultural resource assessment was done by Dr. Edward Otter. A phase one environmental assessment report was prepared by ECI. An environmental assessment and public facility evaluation report, as required by the Environmentally Sensitive Development Overlay Ordinance, was submitted with the application. Inquiries were made to the U.S. Department of the Interior and the Delaware Division of Fish and Wildlife, confirming that there were no endangered or threatened species on the site. And we also submitted in our exhibit book, it's in Section C of that exhibit book, a Section 999C report, which, as you know, is not required for an RPC. That's a subdivision requirement. But also, as you know, I think that's a very handy and concise summary of many aspects of a development, so we did prepare that for your consideration. As to the public utilities, for both the commercial and the residential developments, water service for domestic use and fire protection will be provided by a public water utility company. There's a bit of an unusual situation here, but both Tidewater and Artesian are both available and willing to provide service here. So we're not positive yet who that will be, but it will be one of those public utility companies. Electric will be provided by Delmarva Power, telephone by Verizon, and cable by Comcast. As Mr. Lank mentioned in his opening, sewer service will be by Sussex County. The site is located in the West Rehoboth expansion area of the Dewey Beach Sanitary Sewer District. There are letters from the county engineer, which were just sent in today, as they normally are, basically indicating that this is in the sewer district, that adequate capacity is available, and that for purposes of the sewer study, the county assumed this land would be developed at 4 units to the acre. So there actually were EDUs assigned to this land that exceeds what we are requesting. Basically, what we anticipate is that the parcels involved would utilize 144 EDUs for the residential units, one each, three EDUs for the commercial development, and two EDUs for the community center, which would be a total of 149 EDUs, which is considerably less than the county assumption or the what basically was planned for this area. The on-site sewer infrastructure, of course, will be designed and constructed in accordance with Ordinance 38 requirements, and as was stated, any upgrades or improvements to laterals or things of that nature would be the responsibility of the developer. The development is located in the Cape Henlopen School District. It is in the Lewis Fire Department coverage area. I know you're all familiar with this area, and There is, let's say, abundant shopping available nearby on Route 1, and also medical offices, as well as the BP Hospital, available very, very close to the site in Lewis. As I mentioned, as part of the planning process for the development, in fact, one of the first things that was done was a traffic impact study that was prepared by Traffic Planning and Design, Inc., in accordance with the directions and the parameters established by DelDOT. DelDOT engineers have reviewed and approved the traffic impact study. What that review states is that the developer will be responsible for participating in the road improvements required by DelDOT, and they are set forth in DelDOT's revised TIS review letter, which is dated October 29, 2008, and that is in Section J of the exhibit book. And if and when you have any questions about that, I'll have the traffic engineer expert address those. But basically, what those improvements involve are participation by the developer in improvements at King's Highway and Carpenter's Way in the site entrance, which is in the nature of turn lanes and through lanes, and also participating in an equitable portion of improvements at King's Highway and Dartmouth Drive, and an equitable portion of improvements at Route 1 and Dartmouth Drive. Also, the standard bicycle and pedestrian improvements along King's Highway, which would be done as part of the development. Also, Mr. Lank mentioned that aside from the TIS, DelDOT has reviewed and approved a combined commercial residential entrance, which is shown on the site plan before you. And as I said, that does provide entrance from King's Highway. There is the DelDOT letter of no objection dated May 5th, 2008. That's in the exhibit book, and that's what Mr. Lank referred to. I do want to mention a little bit of additional background on this that was involved. The original entrance design, which was on that original plan that I showed you that was submitted to the county and to PLUS, proposed a joint entrance that would be shared with the adjacent property owner. The adjacent property owner was Outen Real Estate Holdings, LLC. And that's this parcel right here. So the original plan was to have a combined entrance that would be shared with them. And that proposed entrance would be partially located on the Outen parcel and partially located on our parcel. And as I said, would provide access to both parcels. There were extensive discussions between the two property owners and their representatives regarding the parameters of that easement. No agreement was reached as to that that cross-easement agreement. And subsequently, the Outland parcel was listed for sale. The Jones did make an offer to purchase the entire parcel since it was listed for sale, but that offer was not accepted. And as a result of that, we proceeded to basically redesign the entrance on our parcel of land. And as I said, we did receive a letter of no objection for that entrance. Now, I think I know something that Mr. Lank apparently doesn't know. But there was an additional letter of no objection sent from DelDOT. And the reason Mr. Lank doesn't know that is it was sent today, apparently. Basically saying, you know, and I'll just summarize what that letter says is that the it reaffirms that we have a letter of no objection for the entrance that's shown on that plan right there. It goes on to say they would like to see us to continue to try to work with the owners of the Outen parcel to come up with a combined joint entrance, which we're certainly willing to do. But it does take the agreement of the parties, and sometimes parties don't agree. The point I want to emphasize, though, is we do have a letter of no objection from DelDOT for our entrance. Now, also, as part of the original application process, as you know, a development of this nature in the environmentally sensitive development area is required to be reviewed in the PLUS process, and that was done, I believe it was in August of 2006. A PLUS letter was issued from the State Planning Coordination Office on August 28, 2006, and that letter, which is in the exhibit book, states that the Office of State Planning Coordination had no objection to the development. The PLUS letter noted that the development was located in a level 2 and 3 under the strategies for state policies, and the letter actually complemented the design, which avoided most of the wooded areas on the site. A response to the PLUS letter has been provided by Mr. Couples, who did advise PLUS that the design had been modified to address some of the original PLUS comments, as well as some of the additional ideas that had been incorporated into the plan, and that response letter also was in the exhibit book. Prior to filing that response letter, Mr. Couples had met with the PLUS office to discuss the changes, which I've gone over with you tonight, and the Office of Planning Coordination issued a subsequent letter, which is dated March 21st, 2007, which again is in the exhibit book, restating that PLUS had no objection to the changes in the plan, that the project did not require any further review by PLUS, and that the PLUS office, and I'll quote this because I don't get an opportunity to quote things out of a PLUS letter too often, but the PLUS office stated, quote, "They find this to be a positive step in the creation of a quality development that is in step with the efforts of the state and the county to improve the quality of life for Delaware residents." And again, all of those PLUS correspondence are in Section B of the exhibit book. Now, as to the both applications' compliance with the land use ordinances and policies, as I stated, the land is designated as level 2 and 3 under the state strategies policy. The requested uses are compatible with the uses recognized by the state as appropriate in those districts. And again, I'll repeat myself, PLUS has no objection to these applications. The proposed commercial, what is now the CR1 commercial rezoning, and the MRRPC applications are consistent with the purposes of those designations as they're stated in the zoning ordinance, and they're in character with the adjacent and surrounding zoning and uses in this area. Again, as I mentioned, there's a 600-foot commercial strip that comes up Route 1 and runs along the northeast side of Route 1. The commercial strip does extend onto Kings Highway, and as I previously mentioned to you, our requested commercial parcel is bounded on either side by commercial zoning, and this basically would really infill the zoning from the Route 1 strip to the parcel to our east. In addition, again, the land across from our parcel is currently zoned and used as a commercially. The residential development, including the multifamily use, also exists adjacent to our parcel, directly in front of the golf course parcel, as you know from the letter, which is also the entrance road to the golf course parcel, is the Fairway Village development. That is a nine-building multifamily development that's been there for some time, and that was built on land that's zoned commercial. I'm not sure what the density is, but I assume it was zoned commercial, so I assume it's fairly high density, but it is multifamily use. And bordering the golf course parcel on the south, which would be right here, is the Bay Crossing development. That's a 106-acre parcel that was rezoned to an MRRPC in June of 2000. That was, at the time, that was Blenheim Homes was the application, and again, that was approved as an MRRPC. It's significantly built out now. It was approved for 256 residential units, including 84 townhouse units. And the revised design of our application as I said, by preserving the golf course as an open space recreational use, will be located between those two developments and basically enhances the views and the openness of both developments. So again, with our residential cluster being here and this development here, you have this attractive open space area that's located between both of those developments. Based on the existing zoning and existing uses, both the commercial and the MRRPC type zoning, multifamily use, are consistent with the character and the nature of the area. And then lastly, as far as the law, the applications are in accordance with the 2003 Sussex County Comprehensive Plan. The land is located in the environmentally sensitive development area under the plan, which is a designated growth area. The plan states that additional commercial uses will be needed in the environmentally sensitive development area for neighborhood shopping and businesses to serve the increasing population. The plan specifically recognizes that housing types approved for the environmentally sensitive development area include multifamily developments. The plan also specifically states that residential planned communities and village-style development should be encouraged in this area to provide for open space and protect habitat. And we think that is precisely what is being done by the design of our application. The plan also recognizes that any increase in density should provide proper environmental safeguards. And again, Mr. Couples went to a great degree of care to provide those types of environmental safeguards through the buffer and the preservation of wooded areas. And in addition, the site design implements the goals of the recreation and open space element of the plan by providing extensive open space, both active and passive recreational facilities. And really what I think is a major benefit of this design, preserving the golf course, which provides recreational opportunities for not only the residents of this development, but for county residents and visitors. Now, by state law, technically, since this application was filed back in 2007, our application is processed under the 2003 plan. However, as we all know, there was a new plan that has been adopted this year, which is the 2007 plan. And nothing changes with that, though. We're consistent with the new plan also. The new plan places this area in a growth area. This application basically expands housing opportunities near job centers, which is one of the stated goals of the plan. This plan preserves usable open space, specifically the golf course. This site is located where central water and sewer facilities are available, and the new plan, the 2007 plan, again specifically recognizes that multifamily units and office use is appropriate in the environmentally sensitive development area. The development itself, as far as how it would proceed, it's intended to proceed in phases. The first phase of the development would be the development of the commercial site. Subsequent to that, the residential buildings would proceed basically in the manner coming right back from the commercial development. One of the goals there would be to, as I insisted, that the driving range could remain open as long as possible. It's also proposed and not necessarily to be restricted or be specific, but the development is intended to be somewhat marketed as it's not going to be specifically age restricted, but it's going to be marketed as a development that the right name, they call it active adult community, which is really just a nice way of saying it's for people like us with white hair and mature type of thing. Now, I have prepared some proposed conditions for the MRRPC, which, as you know, you would impose on an RPC, and I've also prepared proposed findings of facts for both the commercial application as well as the RPC application. And What I'll do is I'll hand those to Mr. Lank, and he can hand those down to you. They're stapled together, so you just need one.
Thanks, sir. Sorry, Rick.
In conclusion, basically the two applications we believe are in accordance with the language and the goals of both the state strategies plan and the Sussex County land use plan. The commercial CR1 parcel is basically consistent with the zoning and the use that are adjacent and across Kings Highway from that parcel. Basically, that parcel is surrounded by those types of uses. The MRRPC creates a superior living environment by clustering the residential use in order to preserve and protect environmental features on the site and maintain the recreational use and open space of the golf course permanently. The requested MRRPC is the same zoning designation as Bay Crossing, which again is located immediately adjacent to us on the south. The development will contribute its fair share of public facilities improvements. In accordance with DLDOT's determination, the developer will be required to participate and fund an equitable portion of the roadway improvements that are determined necessary by DLDOT. The development will be served by public water and county sewer. And again, the developer will be required to upgrade the sewer to conform to county requirements. And the proposed sewer density, EDU density, conforms and is in fact significantly less than what the county engineering office had allocated for the parcel. Plus indicated no objection to the proposals. They commented that the revised RPC plan was a positive step in creating a quality development consistent with the quality of life goals of the state and the county. Now, Mr. Jones and his wife have owned the majority of this property since 1981. Over the 27-year period that they've owned it, they've seen the land surrounding their parcel, including the adjacent lands, developed in a variety of uses. And we believe that their proposal represents a quality, environmentally sound development that's consistent with the nature of the area and will provide benefit to both the residents of this development as well as the public in general. And gentlemen, that will conclude my presentation, other than we'll be available for any questions you have.
All right, sir, we thank you. We'll see if there are any questions, and we'll start with Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fuqua, there was reference in here that part of the project was originally part of a previously approved two-lot subdivision. Is that the area where the proposed commercial area is going, or is that another section?
That's actually not ringing a bell with me. Where is that?
The way I understood that, Mr. Johnson, was that there was a subdivision, and maybe Mr. Lankin, correct me if I'm wrong, but the subdivision was to create the parcel where the commercial zone is.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's the driving range parcel.
Okay.
That was subdivided in the last year to create the 2.3-acre parcel and the remaining parcel.
Okay.
All right, there's a subdivision plan in the exhibit book showing it. That's all that is.
That's so you have meets and bounds for each of the zoning districts.
Right, the 2.3-acre parcel exists now as a separate parcel.
Right, but it was to create the meets and bounds description.
Yes.
Okay.
And would there be available something of this size for me to look at, rather than, because all I have for the residential portion is the
small map.
The small thing that's in here, and even with my magnifying glass that I keep for Sherlock Holmes,
I went through the same problem. I always had to get out the big plans to really look at them. Yeah, we can.
But I mean, is there a set of big plans that that would be available?
Damn. I got them right here. There would have been Mr. Johnson.
They just weren't attached to the booklet when we got it. Okay. Because in looking at the little plans, obviously I had great difficulty trying to figure out the parking that was being provided for the housing, and I didn't know if there was golf carts that were going to be provided for those residents that had to park way off in the distance to get to the housing units or not. But okay, I'll look at that while someone else is asking questions, not to hold matters up. And with regards to the wetlands, is this 50-foot setback from all wetlands, or is there a distinction between, or is there any one type of wetlands that is contained?
The only wetlands on the site are federal jurisdictional wetlands. There are no tidal wetlands.
Okay.
And the 50-foot buffer, as we know, there's no specific requirement in the zoning ordinance regarding that. That's being proffered by the applicant. And as I said, that's a minimum 50-foot buffer. In most places, it exceeds that distance.
Okay. I just want to clarify whether that was a requirement, whether you're proffering that as part of your addressing some of the environmental concerns that are on this property.
That's our intention.
And how did you arrive at the 50-foot setback?
Basically, it enabled us to still design the development in an appropriate manner, provide the 50-foot, which, as you know, is the actual required setback from tidal wetlands, so it's just a working number.
Okay. Because the reason why I ask is that as part of the plus comments, the DEMREC was requesting a 100-foot, and I didn't know in reading the plus comments if that was just their routine response of 100 feet or if there was a basis on DEMREC's behalf as to why they were recommending 100 feet.
I mean, historically, they asked for 100 feet, I mean, from my experience, and I assume that's just consistent with what I've seen for, you know, several years as far as their request. Again, until recently, there's been no requirement for any type of setback other than tidal wetlands.
I understand. I knew there was an extensive environmental report done, and I didn't know if that was formed the basis behind the 50 feet or if that was... you know, one of those numbers.
Again, I would refer just the tidal setback as being the working number.
Okay, thank you. Concerning the golf course, I realize that's being included as part of the open space. Who's going to be responsible for the maintenance of the golf course?
Yeah.
The Jones family will continue to operate that, and they're responsible for the maintenance.
So that would not be a requirement of the residents of the...
No, it's going to be operated as a separate entity, and it's consistent with, I'm aware of Salt Pond, which is an RPC, was originally created that way, with the golf course operated separately, and also, I don't remember the exact name of it, maybe Mr. Lang can help me, but almost across the Route 1 from this site is the Heritage, what's it called, Heritage?
Called Heritage.
Oh, it's called Heritage? Okay, Heritage. And actually was another development where the residential use was clustered in the rear of the property, and there's some units up on the road also, mm-hmm. in order to preserve the golf course, again, as permanent open space, as a golf course or open space in the future. But that's operated by a separate entity. It will not be a burden of the homeowners association or the condo association unless at some time in the future they acquired it, which actually is what has happened at Salt Pond. The Homeowners Association has acquired the golf course.
And if the golf course was to cease operations, is there a contingency plan for who would be responsible for maintaining that golf course?
We haven't gotten that far. It's certainly the intention to continue to operate the golf course as it's been operated for 27 years, but that might be something that would be worthy of a condition.
Because again, am I correct in that the golf course area is in fact part of this project?
It's part of the RPC application.
Right. So if in fact the golf course stopped operating as a separate entity, that property is part and parcel of this project.
Right. It's within the parameters of the RPC. What I would envision, and again, I'm not to get into what could happen, but it would certainly appear to me it's at enough size that it would be a terrific place for a park or something like that, that maybe the county would be interested in, you know, operating.
Well, the point in my line of questioning on, you know, with that, of course, is, you know, what impact that might have on residents in the future in the event that, that the golf course should stop operating as a separate entity for, you know, for economic reasons or whatever, that it wouldn't become an undue burden on the residents to maintain that. But in terms of the access to the golf course, how would the tenants and that are part of the RPC have access to the golf course?
Basically by foot. It'd be a pedestrian access to the clubhouse. It's not really a clubhouse, but to the office. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with the par three. I mean, it's a pretty low-key operation. If there's a, there maybe there's a handicap golf cart, but I'm not aware of one. It's there's not golf carts. I mean, there's pull carts. That's about the extent of it. But it's, you know, it's easily accessible. Someone's going to walk the golf course. They're going to walk over there from the community. But there'd be no, again, there'd be no vehicular access from the development.
And as part of that, then I would be assuming that the RPC would not be responsible for maintaining the parking area and the access point to the golf course that's through Callaway Drive.
No, they would not.
With the, I noticed, I was able to see on the one drawing, I did have my booklet that there was parking in the bus stop area. Is that part of the bus stop area? Is that also considered part of the parking for the office building?
I'll have to defer to Mr. Couples on that.
For the record, my name is Gary Couples. I'm a registered professional land surveyor and professional planner. President of ECI, Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. To answer your question, that parking is part of the parking for the commercial use.
Because when I was counting your actual parking that's on here makes reference to 49 parking spaces, and that seemed like that perhaps might have been separate from that, Mr. Couples.
No.
Or maybe I'm looking at an old one.
No. The original parking calculation that we had shows 49 on that side of the road, but the parking that we put where the bus stop is was for that or for the bus stop. I didn't have much of a distinction between the two.
Okay. And while we're talking about the office building, where would the stormwater management be for that office building and all the parking, the paved area that's as part of that? Is that part of that the conceptual stormwater management plan, or is there
that is exactly what you're correct. It is part of the stormwater management bond that's on the color drawing.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you were proposing an underwater stormwater management pond.
We're not proposing underground storage.
Okay. And with the office building, we're talking about professional offices. Is that what you're anticipating versus retail, or?
Yes, I mean offices, professional offices, you know, and at that general category.
Okay.
And again, I would, if you're familiar with directly across the street there, there's several office buildings over there, banks, things of that nature.
So you were anticipating something of similar nature?
Okay.
Concerning the RPC with the amenities that are being proposed. What stage, we talk about stage one is going to be the office, the commercial area. What stages do you see the units being built, and when are you proposing that the amenities be provided to the residents?
Having learned the hard way that the time period is not necessarily the best way to phase in the amenities, I'd be looking for maybe a tie-in to building permits or COs. We have 144 units. We didn't specifically put in the conditions when the amenities would be built, but I think to justify those types of amenities, I think you need a significant amount that's built. Maybe the tennis courts are put in after 40 COs and the rest of the amenities after 100 COs, but I think I'll defer to the discretion of the Planning Commission as far as that.
Yeah, he actually did reference.
Was it in there?
Yeah. Recreational facilities and amenities shall be constructed and open to use by residents of the development prior to issuance of the 50th certificate of occupancy.
All right. I stand corrected.
By your own work.
Well, there's a lot. Obviously, there's a lot to digest out of this, out of these materials, Mr. Fuqua.
Yeah, you know, they all run together after a while, don't they, Jim?
Let's talk a little bit about your traffic impact study, and because I saw a reference in there that they were recommending inclusion. As part of that study, some of the other areas that are being proposed on Kings Highway, was that in fact taken into consideration in the traffic impact study?
Yeah, well, let me refer to Guy on that as far as the details. But yes, I think they were all included. And as you know, DelDOT doesn't do those in a vacuum. They bring in other associated things. But
Good evening. For the record, my name is Guy DiMartino, registered professional engineer employed with traffic planning and design. I believe your question was what other developments in the area were considered as part of this traffic impact study? Or?
Well, for example, on one of the voluminous exhibits in here makes reference to recommending that they include within the planning study the proposed developments of Senators, Cadbury, Breakwater, Hawk's Eye, Gills Neck Road subdivision, and the at that time, the 410,000 square feet of retail space that was being proposed. So that was included in your anticipated traffic count? And
yes, all those developments were considered and have been since reviewed by DelDOT, and essentially the traffic study has been approved with the recommendations that were previously mentioned.
And that would also have included the project that's being proposed to be annexed into the city of Lewis?
Yes.
And what kind of road improvements are being proposed or recommended or required by DelDOT that would perhaps make that section of the road a bit safer than what it is currently?
And one of the recommendations related to the access are left and right turn lanes on Kings Highway for motorists entering the site. Also an additional northbound left turn lane on Kings Highway right at our site access, which would be utilized for motorists entering Carpenter's Way. As far as off-site intersections, it relates to Kings Highway and Dartmouth Drive. DelDOT, we would have to coordinate with DelDOT to contribute funds for our equitable share of our traffic at that intersection. And those funds would be utilized for potential improvements. DelDOT has identified two potential improvements at that intersection, one of which would be a roundabout. That would have to be evaluated further to determine if that's feasible. If a roundabout is not determined feasible at that location, an alternative would be to signalize that intersection and also add an additional left turn lane on Dartmouth Drive at that intersection and subsequently an additional receiving lane on Kings Highway to receive that additional left turn lane. Additional improvements, offset improvements, are also being considered at Dartmouth Drive and Route 1. Again, the applicant would enter an agreement with DelDOT to contribute their equitable share of the impact at that intersection. And additional improvements at that intersection would be an additional left turn lane on Dartmouth Drive to head south on Route 1. So it would be a third left turn lane at that intersection, and then also the required signal modifications that would be incorporated as part of that additional lane.
And at what point in time would you envision these improvements to Dartmouth Drive and Kings Highway in particular, more so than the Dartmouth Drive and Route 1?
And that's going to be, we'll have to be coordinating with DelDOT. There's other parties that are involved in this cost sharing. Other developments in the area, and that will all be coordinated with DelDOT as part of this agreement.
And what happens if these other parties' projects are not approved? Will this project be of such a size and nature that they could be able to contribute if not mostly fund, the improvements that might be necessary at Dartmouth Drive and in Kings Highway?
I wouldn't say this site can definitely handle the burden of those improvements, but that's the agreement with DelDOT will address that, or will have to address that. For example, Gill's Neck subdivision is substantially larger than this proposed application, and will contribute a larger proportion of traffic to those intersections. But that will all be coordinated with DelDOT.
And Mr. Johnson, I would add that the if those developments did not occur, the improvements required by DelDOT would be scaled back also to basically address the need for those. Obviously, a lot of these requirements from DelDOT are not in any way directly caused by this 144 unit development in commercial. It's caused by the entire complex of things that are being proposed.
So what would be the anticipated number of trips that would be, in this case, the only access they'd have to Route 1 would be to turn right and then go to Dartmouth and turn left? Because obviously the turn left is, it ends before you get to Route 1. So there's basically only one access point to Route 1 as I look at it.
No, that's not the case. Actually, you can make a left coming out of there and go to Route 1 and then turn right onto Route 1.
Maybe I've just been afraid to go that way.
Well, again, if you're going south, you're just going to come around that way. But, I mean, to answer your question, there are actually two accesses.
They actually can turn left. I've been, like I said, maybe I was just afraid to turn left at it going that way. But, okay. I appreciate that. Now I have a new way to perhaps go. Mr. Chairman, I want to take a break and look at this bigger thing in the meantime, and I may have some more questions later.
We're not going to recess or adjourn while you're doing that, but we're going to proceed. But I'll tell you what, when we get done, we'll come back to you, and if you have any more questions, you can ask them then.
Thanks, sir.
Mr. Burton.
Thank you, and a lot of my questions were answered by Mr. Johnson.
That's why he gets to go first.
I do have, on Quiver Drive, seems to have two stub streets and one ending at a maintenance area that has a break. The road doesn't go all the way to the maintenance area. I question, A, the reason for the two stub streets, and, two, the why it doesn't connect to the maintenance.
Can I approach you and...
What is the reason for this? What?
That building that's shown there is actually a storage building that's used in connection with the golf course.
Okay.
All right. And I was just showing access to it. That's all that was. It doesn't. It's really part of the golf course storage. It's where the lawnmowers.
Can I add to that question? Would that access be utilized by the residents within the Hunter's Walk to get to the golf course?
It probably would be what would eventually be incorporated with sidewalks or something to come over there. But it doesn't really serve anything associated with the development.
And the reason for it off in the back, is that a request of DelDOT or just done for future use?
What's that, just stopping there?
All the way in the back. Quiver Drive runs all the way down.
Oh, I see. Gary, if you can... The other end of Quiver Drive where it comes down here. I think it's because it just goes in the parking lots.
Because right? It goes into the parking lots, and you need that for fire department for turnaround.
Okay. Is there no parking in the front of these buildings? Is that the hatched out area? Is that?
That's a hatched out area. That's because of fire marshal.
Okay. So the units, if I was a resident of these units, I'd have to park on the side and then walk around.
You could park in that area that as an unloading area, unload, and then go find a parking space.
Okay, but so I'd have to come around to the front door. These are
right
townhouses, duplexes.
No, they're stacked flats. A good example of them, you know where Summerlin is? It's almost across the street from this.
Okay. Yeah.
Similar to those.
Okay. Okay. No further questions.
Just one observation. When you propose conditions, I don't see the golf course being addressed. If it ceases operation, that would mean open space. That's something we need to put in there?
I didn't have it in there as a condition because the site plan would be approved that way.
Okay.
It can be added in there. I've certainly clearly represented that's what's being proposed.
Okay. All right. That's all I have.
Mr. Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fuqua, you mentioned the bus stop. If it were, if this site were approved and it was on a DART route, could that bus stop also be used for the DART? Or
certainly. There'd be no problem with that, no.
That the applicant could explore if this was looked favorably on.
Or it could be, it could even be relocated, onto Kings Highway if that's what was requested.
Thank you. In this book, on the record, I just wanted to get it on the tape, it says that various state agencies are welcome to contact Mr. Paul Jones with a telephone number if they request any site visits. That is indeed what your record states, correct?
If anyone wants to visit the site.
It's a plus response, yes.
Yes, certainly.
Thank you.
I think, Mr. Fuqua, it's in ECI's response to Plus's comments.
Yes.
I think there was a question about getting access to the site, and ECI invited them to call.
It's easy access. They can hit some golf balls while they're down.
Yeah. Yeah, it was regarding just a couple of the agencies. Follow-up question in the on page 16 of section G, I guess it is, it says, considering known and potential archaeological and historic, that SHPOA will request a phase one archaeological survey. Have they requested that? Is this a standard response, or do you anticipate them to request a phase one?
No, if you take a look at the assessment that Mr. Otter did.
Yes.
A renowned architect or archaeologist. He indicated that there were no issues there at all, and if there was an issue, it was they talked about a cemetery that they've not been able to find. It was established somewhere in the 20s, and there's been doubts very much that it's ever going to be found, except, and I think he says, by accident.
By accident, yes.
That was the issue.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, thank you. And that would also go for Native American remains as well. Native American or prehistoric man. Remains.
That would be true. If in construction you would uncover something, you contact the office of the state, and they come down and do an investigation.
Yeah. Thank you. And one last question. If this project were acted on favorably, a request of the commission may be that the silt fencing for the construction be set at the buffer line instead of at the
yes.
actual wetland line, and you would agree with that?
Yes, that's no problem.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Lang.
I had a question. Early in the presentation, you made reference to, this may be a number error, but you said that 84% of the existing woodlands will remain undisturbed. And then right after that, you said that the open space and wetland buffer, et cetera, totaled 84%. Is that the same? Is that number correct?
I believe it is.
Okay, just want to make sure. That's all I have.
I'd check that myself.
Okay. That's all I have.
Mr. Counts.
I don't know if this is going to be approved or not, but I do want to thank the applicant for addressing the design issues that were addressed during the PLUS process.
That's all. All right, sir. Counts.
Not a question, just a reminder for the commission on the commercial piece. I think perhaps you all recognize this, but there's been a lot of talk about that being an office-type building. It's a change zone. It's not a conditional use. So if the change zone occurs, it's a myriad of permitted uses under the
CR. Whatever's allowed under CR1 can go there.
Yeah, just a reminder, that's all.
Thank you, sir. Yep. And Mr. Abbott, I didn't mean to slight you.
Questions.
No questions? Okay. And we'll go back to Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I don't have my Sherlock Holmes lens on me, but I could pick up a few things here that I had questions about. I'm looking at units number 133 to 144. If my eyes aren't deceiving me, that appears to say that there's underground parking. Is that correct?
133 to 144, the back rear.
Back rear. Is that the only building that's being proposed with underground parking?
Yes, sir.
And
your eyes are better than mine.
It's a strain, sir. I can believe me. And then I'm presuming that the way that the property is laid out, that these other parking lots are designed to be close in proximity to those units. Because I haven't scaled them out. You know, and there's sidewalks being proposed on both sides of all the streets.
Correct.
Including connecting to Savannah or Kings Highway.
I think those sidewalks would come all the way out to Kings Highway. And then there's going to be a multimodal path along Kings Highway.
So they would go out and, yes, and connect to the Highway to Nowhere on the Kings Highway.
We have to use that expression.
Yes. And I noticed that there's a, in the fine print there by units 19 to 36, it looks like stormwater management area easement. What would that be for?
Right here, yeah, that's the existing easement.
There's an existing easement to the commercial properties that front on the
Kings
Highway. We've provided them an easement for stormwater.
Okay.
That currently exists.
That currently exists, okay.
So, but to follow up on that, is that going to be relocated?
No, it'll remain right there.
Okay, so it's a pipeline, I guess, because there's a building.
It's actually a detention pond.
Because it looks like, at least on the one I'm looking at, that it goes across units 19 to 36. I'm looking at the one in the book. There's sort of an arm that goes out.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, along here.
Right.
Okay. I didn't see a pond being proposed over here. That's why I wasn't sure. That's for them.
Yeah.
Okay. And it appears you're proposing one tot lot for all these properties, or might there be others I just didn't pick up?
We're proposing one tot lot. Again, the intent here is for a active adult community, and we discussed this, and we're certainly well aware that active adults have grandchildren who would be playing on the tot lot, but it's not anticipated it'd be a large need for several tot lots.
And I just have one comment, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
I appreciate their including the wetland setbacks, even though they're not required, Mr. Fuqua. And whether or not the number was one of those numbers, but thank you very much.
I always try to be helpful.
All right, so we thank you. If you would take a seat nearby, we'll see if there's anyone here that has an interest in your application. Is there anyone that would like to speak in favor of change of zone number 1623 and 1624, W&J Jones Family LP? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to change of zone 1623 and 1624? Yes, ma'am, in the red all the way back. Come on up. Give us your name, please, and you may have the floor.
My name's Betsy Barlow. I live at 1 Henlopen Garden, so I'm not adjacent to the land, but I live fairly close to the land. And what I would like to say is I'm not a scientist and I'm not a learned person about any of these issues, but I have read most of the material that's been available. And there are two things. One thing I would like to say first, I have a lot of friends and neighbors who would have liked to have come tonight, but this is a very busy time of year. And if there was any way you could extend it so that after the first of the year, they would still have an opportunity to write their thoughts on it, that would be greatly appreciated. I'm against a change in zoning for two basic reasons. One has to do with the big picture, and one has to do with an immediate concern. I read the study, archaeological and historical study done by the state, and it says that there is no known archaeological or historic reason. However, we in Sussex County know that there is a reason. The elders of the Native Americans have told them that there is a Native American burial site on that land or in the vicinity of that land. And we know that that sort of information that's passed down from generation to generation, we've seen it in other cultures, is often accurate. So I refer you to C.S. Wasslager's Delaware is Buried Past. I will not read to you from it tonight, but he does refer to several villages that are very close to that area. And he also talks about shell middens that used to be so high that you could see them from the ocean along the coast in Rehoboth and along the coast in Lewis, and they all had artifacts in them. Now, we're talking about garbage dumps. We're not talking about burial grounds, which are even more sacred and important. And he talks about how that whole area has been developed now, and there's no way to get access to any of that information or to treat that with any kind of respect because of the development. I have page numbers if you would like them to refer to that. So to give ourselves time, we don't have the resources now to investigate that or to do any exploration of that. I want to give ourselves time so that when we do have the resources and we do have even more specific and careful ways of exploring some of those things, that we can do that. Plus, I want us to treat the people who were here first and their remains with the same respect we would treat any other cemetery. And the second reason is an immediate concern, and it's one of safety. I have to, full disclosure, I have a child who was a paramedic, and I thought the most dangerous thing that he would be doing would be going into houses where he didn't know what he was going to encounter, but the most dangerous thing he did was go be on the roads of Sussex County in an ambulance. It is every emergency ambulance south of that intersection of Dartmouth and 1 goes up that way and on King's Highway to be the emergency room. They have to be able to go as fast as they possibly can. Seconds count. They count for the patient in the back of that ambulance. Traffic lights, roundabouts, anything that makes it harder to go fast is a safety issue. Also, when it's really congested, and this change in zoning would create more congestion, it is just harder to make it safe for those ambulances to go through. I was on that road last week, December, not the tourist season. An ambulance was coming behind me. I admit I'm a little more aware of ambulances than maybe some people are. But I could not get over for a couple of minutes because there was a bike over here and there was traffic over there. We need to have enough leeway on that road so we can pull over. We're talking about the safety of the patient in the back. We're talking about the safety of the paramedic in the back. We're talking about the safety of the volunteer emergency personnel driving that ambulance. We're talking about the safety of everyone on that road. If I'm ever in the outlets and I have chest pain, I want to know that that ambulance is going to get me to the hospital as fast as possible. So I would like to say, for those two reasons, I would like to recommend no change in zoning.
What's the title of that booklet, ma'am?
It's called Delaware is Buried Past.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. All right, anyone else like to speak in opposition? Mr. Tyler.
That book home.
It's an excellent book. I read it.
By C.A. Wasslager. Gentlemen, my name is Mike Tyler. I'm president of Citizens Coalition, and I've lived in Lewis for 17 years. And as president of Citizens Coalition, which is a nonprofit volunteer organization incorporated in Delaware, I'm opposed to both CZ 1623 and 1624. For more than the past decade, we've seen the vital natural land in the environmentally sensitive district being swallowed up by development. Our county's short-sighted vision and developers' lack of concern for our environment have resulted in uncalled development east of Route 1. I was on that Route 1 committee, and that was one of the things that resounded by the members who participated in that third Route 1 committee that said, let's manage the growth and development on the east side of Route 1. I guess nobody heard that because it just seemed to have been accelerating since 97, I guess, when I was on that committee. My concerns are based on this development contributing to creating problems to health, welfare, and safety of residents, visitors, and the environment. You just heard Betsy talking about ambulances and traffic. Like the weather, everybody talks about traffic, but few seems to do anything about it. The average daily traffic count that was determined for this application, 602, I think it ignores the fact that the ADT, the average daily traffic for Kings Highway, is in excess of 16,000 cars. And in peak traffic time, it doubles. I know that for a fact. The PLUS review cautions that the site frontage on Kings Highway is quite close to a curve east of the site and relatively close to a curve on the west of the site. That's a quote. With traffic counts in the thousands, this is a real concern for safety. The report seems to ignore the vital statistics such as carrying capacity of Kings Highway. Michael, you were talking about Route 1 and Dartmouth. Dartmouth is a failing intersection right now at Route 1. And to go south, nobody is going to go left, then turn right on Route 1, then move over three lanes to get into the fourth turn lane to make a U-turn. That's ridiculous. That is unsafe. And so what they have to do is to make a right turn on Dartmouth, if you can, because I've seen traffic back up to the Baptist Church in the summer. If you can break through there and let the New Jersey people let you through, you can get to Route 1, and you'll sit for at least three traffic signal changes before you can turn left.
Been there and done that, sir. Been there and done that,
yes,
sir.
Yes, well, I live it, okay? Because this site is in the environmentally sensitive district, it is essential that it preserves open space and minimizes impervious surface. According to our land use plan, any proposed intensive use should be required to provide a rigorous environmental study. Nobody's talked about the 17% of impervious surface that they allegedly claim that this will cover. The PLUS report says it will render at least 17% as impervious, and it says, given the scope and density of this project, this estimate is likely an underestimate of the likely amount of constructed post-development surface imperviousness, end quote. Thus, this is a real threat to the welfare of the environment as well as the natural permeability of the land. One of the issues that Citizens Coalition has raised at nearly every application hearing is the need to use best management practices to manage stormwater. We believe stormwater ponds to be an outmoded and inefficient way. It's a 20th century way to handle runoff, especially in the environmentally sensitive land. As noted in the PLUS report, and we have said many times, stormwater ponds attract waterfowl like resident Canada geese and mute swans that will create a nuisance for community residents, end quote. Further, many of these so-called ponds are often dry, full of trash, full of litter. And when filled, they're an attractive nuisance for youngsters or for anybody. Stormwater ponds block water recharge and often can be a direct feed to polluting groundwater as they collect parking lot runoff and other chemical discharges. Bioswales and bio retention can be done. And you ask any engineer, he'll say, yeah, well, we could do that, but we don't want to do that. Well, what it does, it creates open space because then you have plantable vistas that will accept groundwater and stormwater runoff. And also they can put little parcels throughout the development that will also accept stormwater runoff. And so by doing that, they can actually increase the ability of that property to divert the water into the recharge area. I think that's very critical and important. There are many other red flags that can't be ignored. Well, I also want to come back. The PLUS review notes that the adequate buffers of 100 feet be established to protect sensitive marsh and wetlands. You know, he says, well, some of them are 50 feet and some are 100. Well, if I get stopped by a policeman going 100 miles an hour, I say, well, I usually do 25 during the week. So my average is a lot less. But my problem is I was going 100 miles an hour. Well, the problem is a 50-foot buffer may not be adequate. And I'm not against the 50-foot buffer if you can show me some empirical data or some scientific data that says this 50-foot buffer will work. If it will work, I accept it. But if it won't work, I'd like it to be what will. If it's 100 feet, then it should be 100 feet. But it shouldn't be arbitrary. It should have some scientific or some technical background. We have a lot of technical people here who can do that. And they can tell you, yeah, 100 feet will work. But you only need 75. So I would hope that would be looked at more closely. These wetlands provide water quality benefits, attenuate flooding, and provide important habitat for plants and wildlife, according to the PLUS. It also points out that DENREC and the Army Corps of Engineers discourage allowing lot lines to contain wetlands to minimize potential impacts resulting from unauthorized and or illegal activities and disturbances that can be caused by landowners, end quote. The other red flags, well, we do need to provide affordable housing. You know, if this is an age-restricted development, it's not so cited because if so, there are different standards that ITE uses for traffic generation, and there's a lot of other standards that such a development would require. So I think you're not passing on an age-restricted development. You're working on a development that anybody can buy. And if so, I would like to see some affordable housing or at least some request that the developer consider affordable housing. We would recommend that the developer, and we would prefer, develop this land as zoned, thereby reducing the density, creating a more manageable traffic flow, and providing more natural open space, and probably some very fine lots could be developed with maybe 25 or 30 homes. We believe that the cookie-cutter design of this site lacks creativity, creates problems with the environment, increases traffic, and ignores the concern to manage and protect King's Highway. This is important, because it is a major gateway for three economic generators: the City of Lewis, history, Cape May Lewis Ferry, transportation, and Cape Henlopen, recreation. It is critical that the county and state maintain important gateways and not succumb to irreversible development that will imperil safety, health, and welfare of everyone. Finally, with the decision in the wings regarding what I call a dark cloud of out-of-scale development that would have a devastating effect on our health, safety, and welfare for everyone if it is approved against your recommendations, we believe any action on this application to be deferred and the record kept open for written comments for 1 week following the decision on the Lingo Townsend site by County Council on December 16th. Gentlemen, that's all I have. If you have any questions.
Do you have a written copy?
Yes, sir, I do.
Would you mind handing that up to Mr. Lang?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else? Yes, ma'am, in the blue. You.
Good evening. I'm Barbara Vaughn, Lewis City Council. I reside at 206 University Drive in Lewis. And although the issue of traffic has already been addressed to some extent, and I certainly support the comments by Ms. Farlow and Mr. Tyler, I wanted to reiterate that King's Highway is a major gateway into Lewis. We have three coming from the Route 1 area and one coming from Henlopen Drive. And as the many developments that are being considered along King's Highway are determined in the future. The potential for basically gridlock within that gateway and onto the streets of Lewis is significant. The time may come when traffic just doesn't move. And I would like very much for you to take that into consideration. We're not just here looking at what happens in the short run, but we all need to be looking at what happens in the long run, and the potential for real serious problems is there. I also wanted to just mention that you take into consideration the environmental impact on Pothook Creek. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Yes, sir, step right up.
I am John Mateko, and I live in 304 Pilottown Road in Lewis. And I'm part of the Managing Growth Around Lewis organization. I would like to speak in opposition to this, both rezoning, upzonings. I believe it will seriously pose a threat to the health, safety, and welfare, primarily for pedestrians, growing proportion of pedestrians. DelDOT is finally getting around to pedestrianizing that Route 1 corridor with sidewalks and so forth. You have to cross that deceleration lane, although the from Route 1 onto Kings. The other area is for automobiles. There are frequent rear-end situations. I know Mr. Burton is no doubt familiar with that. I go out Route 1 probably three or four times a week and take that road back in. I am very familiar with it. And as a simple matter of procedure, if anyone here who has a vote on this matter is not familiar with that area, especially in this time of night in the evening, I would ask you simply, as a matter of getting full information and due diligence, to postpone this vote until you have an opportunity. Just drive by it once, and you'll see what it is. I've been driving for 42 years. It is the most, let us say, care-inspiring piece of roadway I've ever driven on. I am amazed that there aren't lawsuits against DelDOT for accidents and so forth. Literally, it is stacked with driveways on the curve. And so what that means is you're on Route 1, and what do you think the average speed is there? 50, 55, a little 60 sometimes. Someone's going faster than they should. Some people, because they don't catch that that's the turn, or because it's their habit to pull over at the last moment, come in off of Route 1 onto Kings, traveling 50, 55 miles an hour. But anyone who is on that road and intending to turn into one of the driveways, they have decelerated down to 25, 15 miles an hour, together with everybody behind them. Now, the car immediately behind them can see their flashing light if they use it, and we all know that's not always. I don't mean to bore you with specifics, but it's terribly dangerous. I don't like using the thing. So the car behind you can't see the flashing light. But if somebody is coming over, cutting in at the last minute, and see, they may do that because they see these cars going so slow. They say, I'm not going to drift over. I'm going to go out in front of them. You can't really navigate it. You can't figure out whether it's better to drive fast and cut in at the last minute and avoid being behind someone who may not use their flasher and just slow down suddenly to get into the driveway. You know, if you're doing it every day, if that's your house or your business there, you get tired of being on your tiptoes all the time and you just turn in. It's what happens. If you haven't driven there, and you do, you will see it. It's extremely dangerous. Adding more traffic density to that needs to be considered a real public hazard. Now, so that's the first. How do you get out of this? If you were to approve this subdivision with this added density, which is an upzoning, and you should not, right, grant that if you think that's going to contribute to a public hazard. Let me point out a second public hazard. How do you get out of there for the 3 months of the year, June, July, and August? traffic coming out of off the ferry, that direction of traffic, is backed up routinely to the traffic light in front of the high school, and sometimes much further down to the Baptist Church. I know enough never to go that way. Now, if I thought it was early enough in the morning or something, reason I took it out there before 9 o'clock, and I guessed wrong, I will tell you what I do. I don't wait for the 3 or 4 or 5 lights to get off of Dartmouth. I continue along the path that the applicants have suggested that their residents would take. They've suggested that they would come out and turn, make a left-hand turn to get onto Route 1. Well, the problem with that is that's fine if you're going north, but most of the time people want to go south because that's where most of the shopping is, that's where the beaches are, and so forth. You've got to be an awfully good driver, and you've got to have some luck because you've got to hightail it around, across, what is it, 4 lanes of traffic, and you've got to guess that, how fast you can accelerate. And you've got to get over to the deceleration lane, which is a very short distance away. Again, if you're not familiar with this, if you just drive by there and try it yourself, you'll see how difficult it is. I must admit that I have succumbed to that sin because it avoids being stacked up, but it is not something to be encouraged as an application for an upzoning. The Kings Highway is the major, one of the access points for BB Hospital, the regional hospital. It's the access point for the Cape Ann Hope Lopen Park and for the City of Lewis residents and all the other development that has been proposed. And much of it is subdivisions have already been put down. So after this recession, they will be there one way or another. And we have to plan for that now. That's a given. The question is, should we be doing anything further to put traffic turbulence in the most difficult stretch of that highway? And that's the question that you will have to face with this application. And I urge you to deny the upzoning, the 25 or 30 houses that could be put in there with the conventional zoning is probably all that that road can take. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Anyone on the commission have any questions?
I do, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, sir.
Mr. Couples, I've had a chance to strain my eyes a little bit more at the map, and I'm looking in particular at the commercial area and looking up at the, looks like the, perhaps the northern section of it. Looks like there's a sharp slope there. Is that correct? Looks like land sloping from, what, 23 feet down to about 13 feet? Or am I misreading that?
Reading it right. There's an embankment there. That's correct.
And how do you envision putting the building there and the parking? Is that going to be a sloped area? Or are you planning fill or... How's that?
There's a number of ways to handle that. I mean, it's an existing slope. The slope right. is already there. We can grade into it. The other alternative is to go ahead and build like what you call keystone block wall. There's all sorts of ways of handling that. And the plan here, as you see it, hasn't been advanced to that point where we've really provided the grading in any large detail to resolve that issue.
And given that that's sloping down towards the wetlands and the proposed stormwater management ponds located substantially away, how would you envision the runoff that would occur from the parking lot, how would that be handled? So
that's going to be graded towards the building, out the access way that you have to get into the parking, down the road, and into a conveyance system that will then find its way to that pond.
So it would be conveyed away from the wetlands?
Away from the wetlands. So it goes to the pond because you have to have quality treatment before you can release it.
Correct. So you would be able to instill methods to prevent the runoffs from...
There will be no direct discharge to the wetlands.
Okay. Thank you. Now I have a question for the traffic impact study, gentlemen. We've heard testimony tonight concerning the emergency vehicle route going to Beebe Hospital. Was that taken into consideration as part of your traffic impact study in terms of what is the flow of those emergency vehicles that will be en route to Beebe Hospital?
It wasn't directly considered in the traffic study. What I can say is that improvements that we are implementing at our access, such as the northbound on Kings Highway, we're implementing a left turn lane to enter Carpenter's Way. So that will take traffic off of Kings Highway, will not impede the through traffic heading north. We're also proposing a deceleration lane northbound into our site. So again, that would not impede motorists heading north on Kings Highway in that direction.
And do you know if there's any, as part of the road improvements that are being requested by DLDOT or suggested by DLDOT, will there be any provisions for slowing traffic as they pull off of Route 1? Because I know not only do we have the issue of this proposed development, we also have the medical center, medical offices that have been ballooning there, and which obviously creates additional impact on this, which is more of a service road than a main route.
Right. Well, as far as there are no traffic calming measures planned in conjunction with the recommended improvements by DLDOT. Obviously the roundabout at the intersection of Kings Highway and Dartmouth would serve as a traffic calming measure. If a signal were to be installed at that intersection, a signal would slow down traffic at that intersection. Of course, there would signal would have to be designed with emergency preemption so that emergency vehicles could get through in a case of emergency, and that they would trigger the light to go the needed direction so they're not waiting in traffic.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just respond to something Mike said. I want to use that example to point out some again with that commercial. The MRRPC, that's more of a site plan issue. I mean, the RPC entails site plan review with it. You're going to get a crack at a site plan on there if it gets approved as commercial. I mean, that's a separate process where you're going to see whatever they design for parking. I suppose right now, really, that's just informational purposes about what could be put there.
Right.
By the same token, because it's a change in zone, if it were to be approved, unlike the RPC, you can't put conditions on it. I wanted to make that clear to everybody tonight so that you knew how that worked. They're two different animals. So, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. There being no further questions, we'll close the public hearing. We thank you and appreciate your patience. We'll invite you to spend the rest of your Thursday evening with us to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning.